Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. I'm going to continue from this morning's discussion. We'll read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 1, and we're going to cover texts number 3 through 9. Questions by Vidura. Just go back a little bit. I mentioned this morning that the Bhagavatam is not chronological, but I thought it'd be nice to also add it's logical. It's not illogical. Those of you that are familiar with the first canto, chapter 13, Dhritarashtra quits home is the title of the chapter. So at the beginning, it speaks about Vidura, who had left home, having been insulted by Duryodhan, and he left and went on pilgrimage, and while on pilgrimage, he met Maitreya, and he questioned Maitreya to his full satisfaction, and then he returned back to Hastinapur, where he met Dhritarashtra to deliver Dhritarashtra. So that's like a little soundbite in the information, or the beginning of chapter 13. At the end of Canto 1, we find Shukadeva Goswami coming upon the scene where Maharaj Parikshit has been cursed. And Shukadeva Goswami is asked by Maharaj Parikshit a certain set of questions and a whole series of back and forth questions, particularly because Maharaj Parikshit asks about the process of creation. And so Shukadeva Goswami satisfies him. But there's this lingering soundbite back here in the beginning of the 13th chapter, Canto 1. And the sages of Naimisharanya, who are hearing from Sutta Goswami about this discussion of Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadeva Goswami, they pick up on that soundbite and they want to know more. So this is, I'm going to be reading now from the last verses of the second canto, chapter 10, canto 2. Shonaka Rishi, this is text 48, Shonaka Rishi, after hearing all about the creation, because that's largely the subject matter of canto 2, that was the question, that was the answer. After hearing all about the creation, inquired from Sutta Goswami about Vidura. For Sutta Goswami had previously informed him how Vidura left home, leaving aside all his relatives who were very difficult to leave. And here was his question. Shonaka Rishi said, "Let us know, please, what topic were discussed between Vidura and Maitreya, who talked on transcendental subjects, and what was inquired by Vidura and replied by Maitreya. And please let us know the reason for Vidura's giving up the connection of his family members, and why he again came home. please also let us know the activities of Vidura while he was in the places of pilgrimage. So it's setting up this Purana, the narration of history, but in the course, in the context of the history, it's in relation to Krishna. It's not just who done it to whom history. You know, getting a newspaper and what skullduggery did this politician do to that one and how did they retaliate. And it's not that kind. It's in relation to Krishna. So here's a very interesting beginning purport of that. These are these final verses of Canto 2. Sri Suta Goswami was narrating the topics of the creation and destruction of the material world. He's narrating those topics because that's what Maharaj Parikshit asked and that's what Shukadeva Goswami answered. But the audience, headed by Shaunaka, it appears that the rishis headed by Shaunaka were more inclined to hear of transcendental subjects, which are on a higher level than the physical. So maybe this is a little relief for those of you that have a hard time reading about creation. In the Bhagavatam, you know, it's not story. It's hard to read. Let's skip over that and let's go to the nice stuff kind of thinking. But it's important, otherwise it wouldn't be in the Bhagavatam, and it's in part what Prabhupada is explaining here is that it's important because it helps us clearly understand, not just sentimentally, except that there's a relationship between all things with God. We can accept it on faith, but how is that connection made? How does it happen? So it's spelled out in the second canto and also continuing on in the third canto. It's an important subject matter. At the same time, it's on the physical plane, and beyond the physical plane is the transcendental plane. But we need to understand beyond this physical plane, the transcendental plane is moving the physical plane. Here's how Prabhupada writes. The materialists are more interested in physical laws and how they are acting. And they see wonders in those physical glamours. Sometimes due to physical glamours, they forget the glories of the Lord. They should know definitely that the physical activities and all their wonders are all initiated by the Lord. Then he gives example. The rose in the garden gradually takes its shape and color to become beautiful and sweet, not only by blind physical law, although it appears like that. Behind the physical law is the direction of the complete consciousness of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, things cannot take shape so systematically. The artist draws a picture of a rose very nicely, with all attention and artistic sense, and yet it doesn't become as perfect as the real rose. That is the real fact. And how can we say that the rose, the real rose, has taken shape without intelligence behind the beauty? This sort of conclusion is due to a poor fund of knowledge. So then, for that reason, it's more complete fund of knowledge. And a fair amount of the second canto is dealing with that subject matter, but now going back to Vidura, who left home, why did he do that? And what questions did he present to Maitreya, and what were Maitreya's responses, and where did he go when he was on his pilgrimage? What were his experiences? Because it's all going to be in relation to Krishna, because he's Krishna's devotee. So So now, Canto 3, Chapter 1, Text Number 3. The king, Maharaj Parikshit, asked Shukadeva Goswami, when and where did the meeting and discussion take place between Saint Vidura and His Grace Maitreya Muni? Kindly oblige me, my Lord, and describe this to us. Saint Vidura was a great and pure devotee of the Lord, and therefore his questions to His Grace Rishi Maitreya must have been very purposeful. On the highest level, and approved by learned circles. Prabhupada explains one of the things that's in the first canto also. Life is made up of questions and answers. You've heard this. The birds get up in the morning and they're singing. And where is food? Where is food? And the businessman gets up in the morning and he gets out his newspaper, listens to radio, and, you know, what's the price of commodities today and what's happening with the stock market? And questions and answers and questions and answers. So the nature of questioning and answering is going on in all species of life, all grades of life. So when you have saintly persons of the caliber of Vidura and Maitreya, one can understand that the nature of their questions and answers are going to be illuminating and elevating. And Prabhupada explains the same in relation to Krishna and Arjuna. Any sane man can guess that the discussion between Krishna and Arjuna was based on the principle of bhakti yoga. And that's why Maharaj Parikshit is interested in what Vidura and Maitreya had to say. Actually, the whole Bhagavad Gita is based on the principle of bhakti yoga. Then he gives a little teaching here, instruction. There's a difference between karma and karma yoga. So if you ever have an exam on a Bhagavad Gita quiz that asks that question, here's the answer. Those of you who like to get A's in exams, here's the answer. He says it twice, slightly differently. Karma is regulated action for the enjoyment of the fruit by the performer. I'll read it again. Karma, that means prescribed duty, you know, from enjoined in the scripture, karma, prescribed duties, are regulated actions for the enjoyment of the fruit by the performer. That's karma. And karma yoga is action performed, well, he jumps high, he says, by the devotee, already up to the bhakti level, for the satisfaction of the Lord. So karma is regulated activity not for the satisfaction of the Lord, but for the satisfaction of the performer so he can get some nice fruits and enjoy the fruits by that particular prescribed duty, that particular sacrifice. But as soon as there's a touch of bhakti, then it becomes karma yoga, for its sacrifice for the Lord, for the satisfaction of the Lord. Then he writes, karma yoga is based on bhakti. As soon as you have the word yoga, it means the Lord is connecting with the Lord, and the connection is bhakti. So some mixing, a degree of devotion in the performance of prescribed duties, karma yoga, is based on bhakti, or pleasing the Lord, whereas karma is based on pleasing the senses of the performer himself. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada writes, it states this later in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, but its value can be obtained by one who, referring back to our subject matter during Vyasa Puja today, it's the intention or the aspiration, the commitment of the individual to achieve a connection with Krishna, to reestablish relation with Krishna. When one has that aspiration, then one requires a spiritual master. And when the spiritual master is present or is operative in one's life, then the message of Srimad Bhagavatam can be understood. And conversely, the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam won't be understood. It just becomes, you know, a playground for speculators. As does Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, this means that, and that means another thing, and another thing means something else. Romper room. Just child's play. So, where there's a desire for elevation to the spiritual platform, to make that connection with Krishna again, that's what the Srimad Bhagavatam is for, and that's what this discussion between the sages, headed by Shaunaka Sutta, Maharaj Prakshit, Shukadeva Goswami, a sincere inquirer and receiver of the message of the Bhagavatam. So Maharaj Prakshit was serious to learn this, and that's the basis of his question. Continuing, text 5. Sri Sutta Goswami said, the great sage Shukadeva Goswami was highly experienced and was pleased with the king. Thus, being questioned by the king, he said to him, please hear the topics attentively. There's no purport, but take note, this phrase, hear attentively, it's everywhere. It's throughout Bhagavad Gita, and it's throughout the Bhagavatam, and it's how one is going to receive. There has to be a reason to be attentive besides someone, you know, raising their voice and saying, be attentive. It's a desire for connection with Krishna. So please be attentive. Shukadeva Goswami said, now it gets into Mahabharata-like verses. King Dhritarashtra became blind under the influence of impious desires that nourish his dishonest sons. And thus he set fire to the lacquer house to burn his fatherless nephews, the Pandavas. Where do impious desires arise from? It's not natural to the soul. It's due to unwholesome association. And in Mahabharata, the scene in which Dhritarashtra hears Duryodhana's proposal to destroy the Pandavas through the house of Lak, and prior to that, to poison Bhima, shows that Dhritarashtra was a pious king. Prabhupada writes this. By past pious deeds, one may become the king of a country. But because the results of the pious acts of Duryodhana and company were dwindling, it became evident from their actions that they were sure to lose the kingdom to the Pandavas. It's not, you know, a classic theme in literature and, you know, drama and movies and, you know, life is this eternal struggle between good and evil. How many books are there about the struggle between good and evil? You know, the shape of them can be all kinds of different shapes. The Terminator. Terminator 2, you know. Struggle between good and evil. Whatever the other names are. So, why is that, like, you know, a popular theme? Because it's life. And by piety, one may come to an elevated position. But in that elevated position, they may very well misuse their piety. Because piety alone is not enough. Purity is required, not just piety. Someone can accrue heaps and piles of pious activities for misuse, just like the classic is Hiranyakashipu. He underwent great austerities in order to become eternal. And why did he want to become eternal? Because he was already, you know, the king of the universe, so he wanted to be the king of the universe forever. He wanted to be eternal. He wanted to be God. So, Dhritarashtra became corrupted by his attachment for his son. And his son, the Bhagavatam describes that his son became corrupted by the bad association of Dushasana and Shakuni and Karna. Now Karna had, he was an elevated person also. Gee, was his son of Kunti. But because he was deprived of that position, he became revengeful. Envy. Let me bring hurt to those who have what I don't have and I should have. Envy. He became corrupted. And through his association, it's right in the Bhagavatam. And Shakuni. Shakuni was, there's a whole long story about Shakuni's life. I'll tell that another time. But bad association corrupts a good person. So Dhritarashtra was initially saying no. But Duryodhana knew how to play on his father's heartstrings. He let his father know, this is causing me great misery and pain. I can't sleep at night. I can't be happy. I can't live on the same planet as Bhima. If you want to kill me, then tell me no, and I'll just kill myself because I can't live. And all you have to do is remain silent. Don't say no. Don't say yes. Just remain silent. So he couldn't speak. And Duryodhana knew. He like got under his skin and then he turned the knife. This is the plan. The House of Lack plan. And his father remained silent. Duryodhana had him. Because it's the position of the father to impart value and character unto the son, and he wasn't doing it. He was remaining silent. Prabhupada tells the story. This is a discipline story. He tells the story of a young man who, when he was small, he was mischievous, but his mother was permissive. She never disciplined her son. Wild. And so after being undisciplined by his mother, his wildness became, you know, he would steal. And eventually he became a murderer. And eventually he was put in jail. And he was sentenced to death for murder. And he was asked, would you like one parting request? And his parting request is, I want to say something to my mother privately. So he was allowed to, mother came to the prison cell, and she put her ear right by the bars of the prison cell, and he bit her ear off. And he said, you know, because you could have disciplined me long ago and you didn't do that. And now just see the outcome. Here I am in this, I'm condemned to death and you're crying. So it's not like, you know, the message isn't just like, go smack people. But there should have been discipline by Dhritarashtra. Because at least in Vedic culture, you know, there are stories of, like, Kamsa, he, you know, just imprisoned his father. Ugrasen was put in jail. Because I'm Kamsa, who can stop me? But at least in the presence of cultured people, when a father gives them indication, it's the obligation of the son to follow. But Dhritarashtra was remaining silent because he had been corrupted by his own son. And his own son became corrupted by bad association. In any situation you can trace out, there is bad association where there's bad character. Prabhupada describes that about Ajamila. He didn't directly associate with the Shudra and the Shudrani in a drunken condition, but he saw, and through that seeing he became corrupted. And then through the prostitute he became a totally fallen person. Dhritarashtra was blind from birth. Therefore, he was deprived of being king. So his desire was to be king. And he couldn't be king except through his sons. Vicariously, his sons would become king. But that wasn't to happen because Yudhisthira was born first. And Duryodhan was born later. So the rightful heir to the throne was Yudhisthira. So he always was coveting this desire. It was an unlawful desire to begin with. And so that initial unlawful desire led to other unlawful desires. Under the influence of the impious desires to nourish his dishonest sons, he set fire. He didn't set the fire, he was blind, but his permission set fire to the house of Lakh to burn his fatherless nephews. His initial response to Duryodhan was, I can't do that. When I was growing up as a small boy, Pandu, my younger brother, he cared for me. I couldn't see. I was blind. He took care of me like a father, although he was my younger brother. And now you're proposing to kill his sons? I can't agree to that. That's horrible. And the reply of Duryodhan was, then I'll take my own life because I can't live with these Pandavas on the same planet. And Dhritarashtra took him seriously. So go ahead, take the life of the Pandavas. The king did not forbid his son Dushasana's abominable action of grabbing the hair of Draupadi, the wife of the godly king Yudhisthira, even though her tears washed the red dust on her breast. Yudhisthira, text 8, who was born without an enemy, was unfairly defeated in gambling. So this is the third. You know, one, two, the list of atrocities, wrongs permitted by Dhritarashtra against the Pandavas. Yudhisthira, who was born without an enemy, was unfairly defeated in gambling. But because he had taken the vow of truthfulness, he went off to the forest. When he came back in due course and begged the return of his rightful share of the kingdom, he was refused by Dhritarashtra, who was overwhelmed by illusion. So it's the Pandavas' kingdom. And when they came back, this, you know, the whole series of events, but after the gambling, and then they came back, okay, where's the kingdom? And it was even, okay, you take half the kingdom, we'll take the other half of the kingdom. They're entitled to the entire kingdom. No. Well, then give them five states, give them five cities, give them five villages. Kirtan's not going on yet. In the Sanskrit, tamo jushano, Dhritarashtra was overwhelmed with tama, with illusion, with ignorance. He was blind physically and now religiously. You know, he couldn't be... The purpose of religion, or a function of religion, is to take us away from lower desires and elevate us instead by voluntary submission. The Bhagavatam gives this example repeatedly, several times. The example of a bull with a ring through his nose. And a bull is a very powerful animal. And so you've seen, you know, little kids with a little stick, not even a stick, just like, you know, some little lati, little thin thing. And, you know, they smack the bull and pull on the rope. And this big, giant, lumbering, you know, thing. He goes, or he stops, or turns right, or turns left, because there's this little ring in his nose, and he's pulling on the string through the ring in the nose, because their nose is very sensitive. So, you know, the bull could turn around and just, you know, squash the kid. Get out of here. But he doesn't do that. He follows the order of the little boy or the man or whatever. So, similarly, the human being voluntarily puts a ring in their nose, or that is, submits themselves to the codes of religion to be led, because the purpose of religion is to lead one on the path of virtue, or the path of goodness in life, and that goodness in life is to lead one to the spiritual destination, the kingdom of God. So it's voluntary. But Dhritarashtra, he knew the difference between religion and irreligion, but he was covered by illusion. He couldn't. He was blinded by his willingness to overlook Dharma and accept adharma. So he was like, he was blind. Maharaj Yudhisthira was the rightful heir to his father's kingdom, but just to favor his own sons, headed by Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra, Maharaj Yudhisthira's uncle, adopted various unfair means to cheat his nephews of their rightful share of the kingdom. Prabhupada writes, as Kshatriya, the proper livelihood of the Pandavas was only to rule and not to accept any other occupation. A Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya will not accept employment for his livelihood under any circumstances. That would be a nice way of taking care of the unemployment problem. Become a Brahmana or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya. Because I won't accept employment in any case. Arjuna was so sentimentally moved by the consequences of battle that he was prepared to give up being a Kshatriya. I'll go live as a mendicant. I'll go live in a cave in the mountains. Just stop being a Kshatriya. And Krishna's advice was, no, it's not your nature, Arjuna. Your nature is to rule. It's not your nature. You'll be sitting in the cave thinking, that wicked Duryodhana. Not your nature. Last verse for the evening. Lord Krishna was sent by Arjuna into the assembly as the spiritual master of the whole world. And although his words were heard by some, like Bhishma, as pure nectar, it was not so for the others, who were completely bereft of the last farthing of past pious works. The king, either Dhritarashtra or Duryodhan, did not take the words of Krishna very seriously. Big problem. It brought their destruction. That big. Just see Krishna's kindness to the Pandavas, as Prabhupada is writing here, as the spiritual master of the entire universe. He's the Lord of all creation. He's going as a messenger of the Pandavas. Let me see what I can do. Let me see if I can create peace. So it's, you know, Neville Chamberlain going to Adolf Hitler saying, you know, peace in our time. But at least, you know, Hitler said, okay, we'll take this and we'll leave you alone. Dhritarashtra said, no. And when hearing the words of peace, because Krishna was speaking words of peace, there should not be war, there should not be destruction. Although the kingdom entirely belongs to the Pandavas, just give them something so they can act as Kshatriyas and rule over something. You keep the whole rest of the world. The whole rest of the world. And the answer was no. So, by pious activities, one may achieve something. King. But when in that position, it's the duty of king to abide by the codes of Dharma. Or you may not be king, it may be you're, you know, in charge of a household or something. You're to achieve something, there's some piety behind it. But if in that execution of those duties, there's neglect of Dharma, it means that whatever it is that you have, it's going to be taken from you. And the signs were, this is what Vidura was reading, the signs. It wasn't like, you know, mystical tea leaves or something, seeing, you know, oh, it says over here something bad's going to happen. The signs were that Dhritarashtra was acting consistently impiously. It's all going to be taken away. Whatever pious merit is depleting, the kingdom's going to be gone. That is the way of persons who have no credit of pious deeds. Bypass pious deeds when they become king of a country. But because the results of the pious acts of Duryodhan and company were dwindling, it became evident from their actions that they were sure to lose the kingdom to the Pandavas. The message of Godhead is always like nectar to the devotees. but it is just the opposite to the non-devotees. Now, don't we hear that in Bhagavad Gita? What's the verse in Bhagavad Gita that expresses that understanding? Madhavanga? You're scratching your chin. Your eyes are pinching like you're... It's just about to roll off your tongue. The devotees derive great bliss and satisfaction. And what do the demons do? You know the verse? Nobody knows the verse? Somebody knows the verse. When the chanting of the glories of the Lord are heard, the devotees become very... I knew that you knew it. Katayanta tachamam nityam tushanti charamanti cha. And then the non-devotees, they flee here and there. They don't want to hear. And that's exactly what happened. This is like the relation between Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is expanding on that message of Bhagavad Gita. Duryodhan just became so unhappy to be in Krishna's presence and to hear Krishna's words. Bhishma Dev was so happy. So joyful. Sugar candy is always sweet to a healthy man, but it tastes very bitter to persons suffering from jaundice. To be continued. Stay tuned for the next chapter. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1. Any comments or questions? Yes?
Clarification. So I understand that when there is piety but no purity, it will come to clarity. But from what I heard tonight, it appears like even in the absence of, in the absence of piety and purity, in the case of Karna, especially, it seems like the criminal mentality.
Yeah.
And in the case of the Pandavas, when everything is being taken away, they shelter was under Krishna, so they were at no point vengeful, and so much so that Yudhishthira was always praised as the without any enemy. Is that appropriate understanding?
You lost me. Did somebody else follow him? You're making three different statements. One is piety without purity is going to lead to sinful activity. Now, the position of the Pandavas is piety with purity, but they lost everything. But then when they lost everything, they didn't lose their faith in Krishna, and eventually they regained the entire kingdom. And it's not that, you know, it all ends well when we get our kingdom, that it, you know, ends well with whatever Krishna wants.
I was just trying to appreciate that at no point they are becoming revengeful.
They didn't become revengeful, nor did they lose their faith in Krishna. Both. From the discussion, from the Vyasa Puja discussion, they had their shelter. So they were happy without, they were reluctant with because there was cost involved, but the cost was what Krishna wanted. They wanted those wicked people to be removed, so anyway. They were happy with or without. They weren't feeling deprived. They were just, their concern was stay within the codes of Dharma and always please Krishna. That was their concern, whatever the situation. All right.
It just feels quite remarkable that even without any piety, also people, in the absence of purity, obviously that they commit all sorts of activities.
In the absence of piety, as well as the absence of purity, equals Kali Yuga. Anything else? Yes?
The piety that you once talked about, is that of the bhakti variety?
Of that which variety?
Is that devotional piety?
No, he's referring to the codes of dharma or proper conduct. Vice and virtue, right and wrong, that kind, morality. Yes, material kind. Anything else? That reference was Dhritarashtra didn't say, okay, kill the Pandavas. But he didn't say, no, don't kill the Pandavas. He just remained silent. Silence means yes. Silence, Prabhupada said, silence means acknowledgement. He was acknowledging, he heard, he understood. He didn't say, yes, Duryodhan, go ahead and kill the Pandavas. I approve of your plan. He remained silent. And then Duryodhan knew, I got him. So he kept spinning his plan, weaving the plot, unfolding the plan of how it will be done and won't become detected. And Dhritarashtra again remains silent. Okay? I couldn't hear. Yes, silence means acknowledgement. And I could, I could give an example, but the example is already given. My dear father, I want to kill the Pandavas. Please give your permission. And he doesn't say yes, but he remains silent. He doesn't say no. Let's think of, if Vishnu Das tells the temple president, I've been working hard for 6 days, I'd like to skip the morning program tomorrow. Is that okay? And the temple president remains silent. He doesn't say, yes, Vishnu Das, that's okay, you can skip the morning program tomorrow. Take a vacation from devotional service, that's all right. He doesn't say yes. It doesn't say no either. So Vishnudas understands. I can miss the morning program tomorrow and my temple president isn't going to be upset with me. I can get away with it because he didn't say no. You follow?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Contemplating on the point that you made, that whenever there is bad character, there is bad association.
Yes.
So one can actually blame on circumstances or the bad association for a bad character.
Well, yes and no. Because, for example, this is Kali Yuga, and look around in Kali Yuga and you'll find bad association. You don't have to look for it, just look around. You'll find bad association. But there's a choice to take that association or not. Or there's choice to protect oneself from that association or not. But if your guard is down, then that bad association can easily infect. So one has to be trained to not take that bad association, not become infected by the disease. Due to the yes part is, it's just like when entering India, this past visit to India, all the people, all the employees, like from the time you get off the plane to the time you go through customs and immigration and the whole deal, everyone's got a mask on. The swarming plural is coming around. So you think, oh my God, what am I doing? Where can I get my mask on? Because I could get infected. But I don't want to walk around wearing a mask. So I, didn't get a mask. But everyone's wearing a mask. So you're taking a risk to travel around or enter India, because it's like it was a lethal thing. People were dying from the swine flu. They have security, checking what seat number you were in, and gathering all that information. So if someone gets, who's the carrier of the swine flu, and they can isolate the person and put them in. And other countries were literally, putting people in confinement that were carriers of or had any symptoms of. Anyway, so we need to take protection. If we don't take protection against infection, then just like I got something in the course of traveling around. So it's my fault for traveling around. But it's part of my service, so I accept it's part of the consequence of traveling around, that from time to time I'm going to be exposed to something. I just have to have a strong immune system. I have to do things to strengthen my immune system. But even that, there's something that's going to, from time to time, I'm going to pick up something. Just from association with the same air that everybody else is breathing for however many hours you're in an airplane. Someone's got something and you're all going to be exposed to it. Depends on what your immune system reads. Yeah? Okay, yeah.
Right, I have two different questions. One of them is mentioning that Prahlad Maharaj, one of his qualities, would be glorified for remembering Krishna. The one thing that I really find it challenging is when
and overcome by material conceptions, that memory of whatever I've heard is like completely gone. And at that point, it's very difficult to even think about where is my shelter. And even if I think, ask that question, like I'm all over the place, it's, I'm not really struggling to come back. Although after a while, okay, I have to chant or hear or pray. But there's this good amount of time I spend just
floating.
It's very, very draining.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So,
what to do? What
is
to do?
The memory that this memory that comes with time, or is there something like
well, you know very well where what's the source of remembrance. It's the same source of forgetfulness, and that's super soul. So, when what was the strength of Prahlad's remembrance? Relationship, specifically his relationship with Narada. Because when asked, the evidence of that is when asked by Hiranyakashipu, by Lord Nrisimhadev, to accept some benediction, immediately it was like, how can I accept a benediction and leave Narada? There's no question of leaving Narada, because that's his shelter. And because of that shelter, he's protected. He's hit that remembrance. The means of remembrance is at his fingertips. It's accessible. So in other words, to say it differently, remembrance of Krishna is not an intellectual put this piece together with that piece and it's a fit, like a jigsaw puzzle. Rather, it's from the heart. And when it's from the heart, circumstances can be whatever they are. It's not an intellectual exercise. Remembering, okay, now I have to, it's flowing from the heart. So, is there something that I can do? It's strengthen from the heart those relationships. And then it's that the flow, the connection, is always there. There may be, a weaker signal sometimes than other times. Something like cell phone technology or something, a weaker signal. Because the signal is already there. It says, is there a transmitter station close enough by? Are we tuned into the Krishna channel enough to receive the message from Supersoul? So, the strengthening of the relationships will strengthen the remembrance. That was the same messages from the Vyas Puja lecture also. It's commitment to those who are delivering Krishna in our lives, and the vitality or vibrancy of those relationships that can in turn strengthen or nourish the desire to be with Krishna always, or re-establish our relationship with Krishna through the medium of our regulative devotional practices, chanting, hearing, reading, then in turn remembering. The second question?
When we were actually driving from Boston, a group of four of us, we were having an end-level discussion about a point about silence, how to interpret the silence of the Supreme,
how to interpret the silence of
a superior. And we all felt that we needed to present this question because there seem so many possibilities.
There are different possibilities. It's not only one. I can say, like right, you know, in my speech, I pause, and you know, so that pause, that silence doesn't mean, you know, yes to whatever you just said, necessarily. Part of it is, you know, like scanning to get the best, you know, signal from Supersoul, or things that what has Prabhupada said. It's a little bit like if you want to know what did Prabhupada say, what was Prabhupada's position on such and such. You can go to Folio and find something that justifies this. You can go to Folio and find something that justifies that. Go to Folio and find something that justifies another thing. But you know, to do a whole Folio search on what Prabhupada said about a topic, that's, you know, it's more comprehensive. So that's, you know, like not just what was said in one circumstance, but you know, how did Prabhupada direct in a broader scope? So it takes some reflection. What's the big picture? And how does this fit into the big picture? And sometimes it's, you know, for me, a pause is this appropriate? You know, recognizing the circumstance, the time, place, and circumstance, and the individual, and what's appropriate. And sometimes it's appropriate to say nothing. It's not appropriate to disclose something. It's just not appropriate. Sometimes. It's real easy just to like, you know, blah, 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 blah. It takes much more composure to like consider what's appropriate. What's fitting to the time, place, and circumstance. So, and I don't know if I'm giving you, a cookie-cutter answer to your question, because I don't think there is a cookie-cutter question, or answer to that question. What does silence mean? If the time is right, something will be, you know, after some silence, something will be expressed, and if the time isn't right, then it just remains unexpressed. Is that all right, Krishna, for you? Is that all right? That's a very easy thing to answer. That's quick. No, it doesn't mean that. No.
Because they get very nervous when there's a long pause.
Rupa.
Another question, can I ask?
Yeah, why not?
Thinking about that example of Lokanath Goswami and Ratan Das Thakur in the retreat this morning, found that like so difficult to ascertain what is the right thing to do, because seemingly like the processing that Ratan Das Thakur went through to actually serve that Vrajavasi.
It was nice.
Yeah, so.
But it was the mood of his spiritual master. Other, and he, you know, chastened him in the process of chanting. That's fine. I qualified that story by saying that doesn't mean if you have some opportunity to serve the devotees, don't serve the devotees, because the wrong thing to do would serve the devotees when you're chanting. But it means that we should. When chanting, this is very, very sacred activity.
But he could not have interrupted his spiritual master and asked, like, what should I do? Or, like,
not Lokanath Goswami. Yeah, then there's a matter of It's a matter of relationship. There's when one has the proper relationship and a modest degree of common sense, then there's some understanding of when to express something and when not to express something. That's a matter of relationship and a little common sense. A modest amount of common sense. I can say I personally prefer when it's chanting to just chant and not have people come up and say, you know, did you make the schedule for the GBC meeting yet when I'm chanting japa? I'll talk to me about it after japa. Or something. But if, you know, the house is burning down, you know, I'd like to hear that. There's a fire in the kitchen. Do you know where the fire extinguisher is? I was having the discussion with another devotee during the course of these last couple of days, where that's a concern for them, that when chanting they want an atmosphere where it's just, you know, so it's said, just then have discussion with the devotees that you chant with and make some kind of norms that, you know, at least between this time and this time, as far as possible, it's like there's no interruption. It's just everyone is focused on chanting. So that when you're chanting, you're focused on chanting. You're not multi-processing, you're focused on chanting. Like this morning, just a practical example. This morning, I wanted to make sure that Rati knew to have, you know, have the microphone ready for the Guru Puja, and that Mukunda would have the mridangas tuned up because they were sounding clunky. And we had two instead of one mridanga. But I did that at the very beginning, and then just sat, chanted. So wasn't he like jumping up and down and running around and running around and running around? It was quick, quiet, and discreet, and then just sit and chant. As an example. Yes. Good association and cultivation of good habits. That's a long topic. When I started the inquiries into the Absolute, that was one of the first ones. So you can go in that log and find them if they're back up online now because everything crashed. But it wasn't your fault. It just, the server crashed, right? It's not your fault. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about that in Amnaya Sutra about overcoming bad habits. Something like that is how it's identified. And he gives a formula for doing that. And he gives it a time period of 5 years to overcome one bad habit. And then identifies you may have a number of bad habits and that could take a lifetime to read. But, you know, stick with it. So you read that. He gives that explanation. Okay. Can you save it for tomorrow? Fantastic. Shishi Radha Govinda ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi ki Jai.